This is The Guardian.
Today, the story of Vladimir Putin's most unlikely soldiers. Thousands of young men from India and Nepal trafficked and sent to the front lines of the war in Ukraine.
Today in Focus is supported by Rainforest Trust. In honour of this year's Earth Day, we're promoting Rainforest Trust's Brazilian Amazon Fund throughout April. Rainforest Trust is a 501c3 organisation, which means that 100% of all money donated goes directly to conservation efforts. The fund has already helped protect more than 6.5 million acres of rainforest habitat, but Rainforest Trust still needs to protect a further 13 million acres to reach its goal. You can help. Donate online at rainforesttrust.org/earthday this April, and your generous gift will be quadruple matched for the Brazilian Amazon.
Twenty-three-year-old Hemal Mungakia grew up in Surat, a city in the Indian state of Gujarat.
He set up his own embroidery business, but he's from a very kind of small, not particularly affluent family, didn't earn very much in this business.
And so, like a lot of the young people around him, he looked for work abroad, where there were more opportunities and better pay.
Hemal was one of the people who saw this YouTube video run by this guy called Baba Vlogs.
In the video, an Indian recruitment agent strolls through the streets of St. Petersburg saying, "This is a quiet and peaceful city, and there are jobs for you here as a security guard or as what he calls an army helper. You won't need to go anywhere near the front lines in Ukraine," he says. "Over time, you might even get Russian citizenship. And the pay is $2,000 a month, money that goes a really long way in Gujarat."
He is someone who wanted to go on to bigger and better things. He wanted to earn more for his family. And so he contacted this agent.
He told his family. They thought it was a good idea. And so he got a passport made and he left.
And so he was really optimistic when he left India. He thought this, you know, he was going on to something good and that was going to really kind of help his family, lift them out of poverty, bring the kind of opportunity that he just can't get in kind of small town India. But then he got to Russia.
There, Hemal was given a contract to sign. It was in Russian, but his agent said, "It's just paperwork, sign it." And he did. And then they took his passport away.
Even then, he apparently, according to his family, didn't think he was in any danger because the agent had told them, you know, it's procedural. And then he was sent to a training camp, which was a military training camp, where he was given a gun for the first time. He was taught military warfare tactics, all of these things. He was then not sent to a safe job in St. Petersburg. After just 10 days of this training, he was sent to the front lines in Ukraine.
By this point, Hemal's family was starting to worry. He was calling them a lot, but being vague on the details.
He was talking about digging trenches in the war zone. He was talking about carrying arms. He was talking about carrying ammunition, being next to Russian soldiers in the trenches, and even operating weapons himself.
And then last month, Hemal's dad got a call from an unknown number.
And this was the brother of another Indian who'd been fighting alongside Hemal. And he had to tell him that Hemal had been killed in a missile strike. Since that point, the family don't really know where he was stationed. They don't know anything about where he was. And they haven't been able to get his body back.
Hemal Mungakia's story has helped to expose one of the lesser-known crimes of Vladimir Putin's war in Ukraine. The young men from countries around the world trafficked to Russia, pressured into joining the army, and ordered onto the front lines. Nobody knows for sure how many there are like Hemal fighting in Ukraine right now. And their families have no idea how to get them out. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, the young South Asian men forced onto Putin's front line. Hannah Ellis-Peterson, you're The Guardian's South Asia correspondent. How did this story first come across your radar?
Well, like so much in India, this first really started to emerge on social media. Videos of Indians and Nepalese people who had ended up in Russia and felt like they were stuck there started to circulate. Family members started to put out pleas saying, you know, that their family members were in Russia. But it was all very confusing about how they'd ended up there, why they were there. Then this news of the death of Hemal Mangukya broke and lifted the lid on the fact that dozens, if not hundreds, of Indians were on the front lines of the Russia-Ukraine war.
And you've spent the past few weeks trying to piece together the pictures of some of these people who have ended up on the front line in Ukraine. What kinds of young men in India and in Nepal are finding themselves in this situation?
The saddest thing is there's nothing particularly kind of special or unique about these men. Their stories of unemployment and desperation and exploitations are ones that I've encountered so much in my time in India. This idea of these men in small towns who, where employment is scarce, salaries are extremely low, and they're desperate for better opportunities for themselves, for their families. And so, you know, they look for whatever opportunities they can. Often those opportunities are seen as ones that are abroad. And so things like migrant work are very common. You know, particularly in Nepal, you've got these villages which are completely emptied of men because they've all gone to the Gulf and they've all gone abroad for this kind of migrant labor. And often these jobs are extremely exploitative. These men get into, you know, very high levels of debt. They're often working in terrible, inhumane conditions because of the levels of desperation in these places. And so this is a story I've heard a lot and I've seen a lot, but the fact that this has then been exploited to send these men to a war that they know nothing of, and, you know, often them, the level of actual information they have about the Russia-Ukraine war, you know, is very minimal. And so the exploitation that has gone on in order to send them there is, you know, really one of the kind of worst things that I've seen in my reporting in India.
Hannah, what kind of role is social media playing in these guys ending up in Ukraine?
Well, so it's playing a huge role. I mean, particularly in Nepal. So we spoke to a man called Nandaram.
Hello, hello.
He's a Nepalese man who at the time had been working as a migrant worker in Qatar, where he was working as a driver, but he was earning absolutely no money. He heard about some jobs in Russia through Facebook. Some friends of his from this village, you know, were circulating posts about jobs in Russia on Facebook. And so he started to make contact with an agent through Facebook Messenger, and they started to chat. And this agent told him there was no risk in this job. If he was concerned about Russia, then he could even send him for work in Germany. So for Nandaram, Germany seemed like the promised land. He said it was, you know, exactly what he'd hoped for. So he paid large sums of money to this agent who told him he would just be transiting through Russia. But when he arrived in Moscow, he was picked up by an agent and then presented with a contract to sign in Russian, not understanding what he was signing, not knowing that this contract signed him up for a year in the Russian army. And if you escape, then you sign yourself up for a long period in jail.
What did he tell you about what happened next?
When he got to Russia and he went to this military training camp and was sort of handed a rifle for the first time, he had this dawning realization that he was never going to be going to Germany, and this was where he was. And they'd taken his passport, he had nowhere to go. He was completely in the hands of the Russian military at this point. So after 12 days in this camp, which he described as a horrific experience, he was then sent to Bakhmut, which is right on the front lines of the Russian-Ukraine war, where one of the longest and bloodiest battles has been taking place. He spoke to us from Russia, and he described how scared he was when he got there. They were in the bunkers on the front lines. They were repeatedly hit by drone strikes. It was freezing cold in the depths of winter. There were bodies scattered around, frozen in the ground. There wasn't really any food. He was tasked with carrying weapons and manning the front lines alongside other Russians and Indians and other Nepalese fighters. And he said it was essentially hell on earth there. One night, as he was sent to go and pick up some ammunition and then bring it back to the trenches, he and several others were hit in a drone strike. He was hit with shrapnel in his arms and legs, and it pierced his helmet, and it killed several of those who he was with. He was then taken to a hospital in a kind of big city in Russia, and then has been, since that point, shifted around to army camp hospitals, which is where we spoke to him. But he didn't know where he was. He doesn't speak any Russian. There was no one around to help him. He's absolutely terrified of getting better because it might mean being sent back to the front lines. And he just pleaded with us, I don't want to die in this war. I don't want to go back. He's reached out to the Nepal embassy. They don't know where he is. They've told him he needs to reach Moscow and then they'll get him out. But he's in a situation where another Nepalese fighter that he knew tried to escape from hospital and he was caught and then, as far as he knows, sent to jail. So he's too scared to run away. So he's in this kind of terrible situation of really not feeling like he has any way of escaping.
That is just an astonishing situation to be beyond the reach of your own government and afraid of getting better because that might mean you just get sent back out to the front line.
This idea of them actually not being reachable and retrievable is something that has been kind of a recurrent theme in these interviews we've spoken to. Even though families are able to speak to their relatives out there, the respective governments, Indian and Nepal, are not able to get onto the front lines. They're not able to pull these people out. So, you know, they just have to leave them there. Another really devastating example from Nepal was the story of Siddhartha Dakal, who was this young guy from this village in Nepal, and he always wanted to be a doctor, and he worked really hard. He's from a very poor family, but he was always an excellent student, and his dream is to go abroad to study medicine because he felt like, you know, he wanted to get a proper medical degree that would be respected around the world. And so he spoke to some friends after he'd graduated from high school who talked about, you know, going to Russia for university. And his family didn't want him to go. But, you know, he said his friends had convinced him that this is where he'd be able to go and study. He'll be able to get a proper medical degree in Russia. His family took out a loan on their land and remortgaged some other piece of land in order to raise around $8,000 for what they said was the necessary fees for students and agents, and basically put their whole life on the line in order to send their son to Russia. So, you know, he flew to Russia on a student visa, believing he was going to study at a university. And then he arrived and there was no university, there was no money for him, there was no food for him. And the only option he was given at the other end by the Russians in order to survive was to sign up for the military.
Unbelievable.
And so, you know, his poor parents sitting back in Nepal, you know, they were speaking to their son. And the last time his father heard from him, he got an audio message from Siddhartha, who sent it over on Facebook Messenger. And it said, Dad, I'm going to war in a dense forest area. Don't worry, you know, there might not be any network for 8 to 10 days, so I might not call you, but don't worry about me, I'll be fine. A couple of days later, some neighbors knocked on their door.
I'm from Nepal. I'm 22 years old.
They had a video that they had seen on Facebook, and the video was released by the Ukrainian forces. And it's Siddhartha stating that he's been captured as a prisoner of war. He's being held in Ukraine and pleading for the Nepal government to rescue him.
I have no other choice, and then I am joined to military.
His parents are beside themselves. This is their son, their only son, who, you know, is their great hope, who believed he was going to Russia to become a doctor and has ended up as a prisoner of war in Ukraine. In this interview we did with his family, his mother just completely broke down, pleading for the Nepal government, for anyone, to get her son out.
And Hannah, once people end up on the front line risking their lives in this war, are they getting the money that was the incentive for them to go out there to begin with?
So some of them are getting some money, but it's definitely not a kind of regular income. So Nandaram, the Nepalese man, said that when he arrived, he got a really large sum of money into his bank account. But since he was injured in the war and since he's been on the front lines, the payments being made into his account have got less and less and less. For the story of Siddhartha, you know, the family took out a huge loan in order to send their son there. And they've got to make huge repayments on that loan, but they haven't got any money because their son is imprisoned in Ukraine. And so he's not getting any kind of salary for the fact that he's there on the front lines. So, you know, these men aren't even necessarily getting the money that they were promised.
It sounds like in Siddhartha's case, I mean, he didn't go to Russia to become a military helper or to get some kind of security job. He was tricked. How sophisticated are the schemes that you heard about to get people into the Russian army?
Well, I mean, they're not that sophisticated, but they're just preying on a huge amount of desperation amongst people. So we spoke to the family of this guy, Yusuf, who was one of many people who, it appears, ended up in Russia because they thought they were going to Dubai for jobs as domestic workers. It seems like actually dozens of people were duped in this way, where they didn't even think they were going to Russia. And you've got these agents who are making vast sums of money from every single person that ends up in the Russian army. Each of these people are paying 300,000 rupees, which is, you know, £3,000 per person.
One of the big social media recruiters responsible for sending some of these guys to Russia is a YouTube account called Bubba Vlogs. And what I found really shocking is that his videos inviting young men to Russia, claiming they'll be safe, are actually still on YouTube right now.
They are. And we actually spoke to Faisal Khan, the guy who runs Bubba Vlogs, and he claimed he'd also been duped. So he said he had no idea that he was sending people to the front lines, that he had been told by a Russian agent that this was, you know, an opportunity for Indians. You know, he usually recruited people to go to the Gulf, but he was flown out to St. Petersburg to make this video. And he said that he'd been convinced that these jobs were genuinely just security guards and army helpers far from the front line. And when he realized that several of the people who he'd helped recruit had ended up on the front lines, and in one case was one of the people who died, he said that he'd been trying to get them back. Whether or not that's true, it's very hard to know, but certainly he was the one charging 300,000 rupees per person. You know, he claimed that he only kept a small portion of it and handed most of that on to another Russian agent. And, you know, YouTube is where large amounts of people get all of their information from. And Bubba Vlogs is just one of them. There are other YouTube channels. And so it's very hard to kind of fully crack down on these guys, both online and kind of small rural India.
Coming up, what are India and Nepal doing to get their citizens back from a war zone?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
In Norway, a woman's boyfriend forgets who she is overnight. In Detroit, a man is arrested, but he was never at the crime scene. In Spain, disturbing pictures of young girls have appeared, and no one knows who's behind them. Something strange is happening. A collision between people and artificial intelligence. Discover more in The Guardian's new series, Black Box. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. New episodes Monday and Thursdays. Hannah, one of the things I'm wondering listening to this is why the Russians would be looking towards places like India and Nepal. Because obviously they have big populations, but so do many countries. So does China. So does Nigeria. So why are so many of these people being drawn from India and Nepal?
I think there's two reasons. The first is the kind of vast pool of people desperate for work and kind of willing to go abroad for migrant work, and the fact that there is already a setup of agents who can be these middlemen. But also there is the fact that, you know, particularly India and also Nepal, they have a very good relationship with Russia. It doesn't raise any suspicions when people are flying from India to Russia. There is, you know, no problem for the payments of money from Russia into India. And so it's very easy to move labor between India and Russia without raising any red flags. People still go over there for studying, so there are still student visas on offer. That's kind of, I think, one of the key reasons that Indians and Nepalese people are being preyed upon.
Given that the relationship between the Indian government and the Russian government is pretty good, do they have any power in helping to either get their citizens who are in Ukraine back to India or stop them from going there to fight in the war to begin with?
Well, it seems that the governments have now kind of woken up to this. The Nepal government actually took the step of making it illegal for their citizens to go to Russia and Ukraine because the situation was getting so out of hand. And they found, you know, they had hundreds, if not thousands, of Nepalese people on the front lines with no available way for them to get them out. The Indian government are talking, saying that there are maybe 20. They say they are trying to get them out, that they are in constant communication and negotiation with the Russian government. But it doesn't seem like many people are being brought back. The only way that people are managing to get back are if they physically escape from the army themselves and manage to run to the Nepal embassy in Moscow or the Indian embassy in Moscow. So it's taken both of the governments, I think, a while to wake up to the reality of this and the fact that it really is going on at quite a large scale. And India's Central Bureau of Investigation did a huge number of raids across places in Gujarat and Punjab and other states which are kind of known for migrant labor and arrested a whole load of agents they said were involved in a racket to send Indians to Russia.
But given how desperate people are in some of these places and how sophisticated some of these schemes to get people to Ukraine are, how easily can you stop it? Like, can you just ban it and expect that people will stop turning up there?
I mean, I think not. I mean, particularly it seems like in Nepal, a couple of the people we spoke to, they kind of knew the reality of the war, but they still said $2,000 a month is more than I will ever be able to earn here. And so, you know, even if it's a little bit risky, I will still go. I mean, I do think, you know, more awareness is definitely helpful. I think that most people who ended up there, and particularly Hemal, who died there, his father said, if he had known what he was going to do, he would never have gone. And that's something that has been reflected in a few of the other interviews we've done. But I think it's kind of impossible to stop it altogether, because while there is this kind of desperation for jobs, then there is this market for people to be exploited.
Hannah, this is a shocking and really tragic story that you've discovered here. I wonder, when you look at it, what do you think it tells you, both about Russia's war effort in Ukraine, but also the places where these people are coming from, countries like India and Nepal?
Well, I mean, I just think it speaks to this kind of huge wave of desperation which exists in kind of rural small town India. And I think, you know, we saw this in kind of another way in which, you know, Indians are also being recruited to go and work in Israel to replace the Palestinians who can no longer work in construction there. But it also speaks to the kind of extreme cruelty of this war that, you know, they are not only kind of preying on their own citizens, but they're also going abroad and preying on vulnerable Indians, vulnerable people from Nepal to go and be proxy fighters in this war. And so, you know, it's just a real kind of story of tragedy, and the fact that these kind of conflicts, you know, they spin out in ways that you could never kind of imagine. I would never have thought when this war began that, you know, one of the stories I'd be telling is the deaths of Indian and Nepalese fighters on the front line of the Ukraine war. That's the kind of horrific ripple effects that these kind of conflicts have. And there's just so much kind of vulnerability and exploitation that takes place in India. And I feel like this has just been kind of taken beyond to another kind of dark realm when it's come to putting these men on the front lines of this war.
And that was Hannah Ellis-Peterson, The Guardian's South Asia correspondent, whose work on this story, along with all her excellent coverage of South Asia, is at theguardian.com. Before we go, The Guardian has a new podcast series called Black Box. It's all about what happened when artificial intelligence collided with humanity. So far, we've had stories of people who have fallen in love with AI, people using it to identify cancer years before doctors can, and people who have been accused of crimes, arrested, and ended up in jail cells because of AI. It's called Black Box, and you can find it wherever you listen to Today in Focus. And that is it for today. This episode was produced by George McDonough. Sound design was by Solomon King. The executive producer is Phil Maynard, and we're back with you tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.